Part 2. So, now we're at the part where I actually become a brain in a box. I don't remember the first part of it at all. I was shot in the back of the head point blank with some sort of electrical stun gun. I was out. After I got zapped, I was taken to the RA's ship where a doctor of some sort, at least I hope it was a doctor, put me into a medically induced coma, the first step of the process. I was unconscious through the skip 3 days later. I was unconscious when we arrived at our destination. I was, thankfully, unconscious for the part that came next. And then there was the recovery period, which is substantial because, and I think this may be obvious when you think about it, removing someone's brain from their head and keeping the brain alive in a box creates a considerable amount of trauma for the brain. All told, I was out for 18 days. And when I say I was out, I mean that I was O-U-T out. I didn't dream. I didn't dream because I don't think that technically I was sleeping. There's a difference between sleeping and what was happening to me. Sleep is an actual thing your brain does to rest itself and tidy up after a day of stimulation. What was going on with me was something else entirely. If sleep was going for an easy swim in a calm pond, what I was doing was fighting to surface in the middle of an ocean storm far from any land at all. I didn't dream. I think it's probably better that I didn't. During all this time, I surfaced only once. Well, once that I remember. I remember feeling like my consciousness was being dragged hard through sludge and thinking, I can't feel my legs. And then, I can't feel my anything. And then falling back down into the sludge. I did feel something the next time I regained consciousness. I had, bluntly, the worst fucking headache I had ever had in my life. I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. But try this. Imagine a migraine on top of a hangover while sitting in a kindergarten of 30 screaming children who are all taking turns stabbing you in the eye with an ice pick. Times 6. That was the good part of my headache. It was the sort of headache where the best possible course of action is to lie there motionless and quiet, eyes closed, and pray for death. Which is why I think it took me longer than it should have to figure out a few things. The first thing was that it was dark in the sort of way that shouldn't be possible. But go ahead and close your eyes. Do it right now. Is it totally dark? I just realized you wouldn't have read that last question if, in fact, you'd just closed your eyes when I asked you to. Look, I told you I wasn't a writer. Let me try this again. Close your eyes for a minute. Then, when you've opened them up again, ask yourself if it was totally dark when you had them closed. And the answer was, no, it wasn't. If you were in a room or a place that had any light in it, some of that light found its way through your eyelids. If you were in a dark room, reading this on a screen, then you had after images of the screen on your retina. And even if you were in a dark room, maybe listening to this being read to you, eventually the very physical fact of your eyes would eventually make something happen. If you rubbed your eyes, you'd press on your optic nerve, and ghost images and colors would appear in your brain. The darkness is never totally and inescapably dark. But this darkness was. It wasn't the absence of light. It was the absence of anything. And once I realized that about the darkness, I also realized it about the silence. Oh, there's no such thing as perfect silence either. There's always some noise, even if it's just a phantom hum from the hairs in your cochlea moving around in your head. There was nothing but the perfect clarity of nothing. Then I realized I couldn't taste my mouth. Don't look at me like that, because even though I can't see you, I know you're looking at me like that. Listen, I don't care if you ever think about the fact that you can always taste your mouth. You are always tasting your mouth. It's where you keep your tongue. Your tongue doesn't have an off switch. You're tasting your mouth right now. And now that I've brought it to your attention, you're probably realizing that you should probably brush or chew some gum or something, because your mouth, by default, is a kind of a little off. Taste-wise. You can taste your mouth, even when you're not thinking about it. I was thinking very hard about it, and I couldn't taste a goddamn thing. And this is where I started to lose it. Because you know about blindness. It's a thing that happens to people. They lose their sight and maybe even their eyes, and while it's possible to regrow eyes or to create artificial ones, you still accept that blindness is real and maybe it's happened to you. The same with deafness. But who the actual fuck can't taste their own mouth? So yeah, this is where my brain well and truly started saying, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, on a more or less infinite loop. Because after that, everything I wasn't sensing hit me head on. No feeling in my hands or feet or arms or legs or penis or lips. No smells coming in through my nose. No sensation of air going past my nostrils and into my nose. No sense of balance. No sense of heat or cold. No nervous swallow. No feeling of fear sweat in my pits and on my brow. No racing heart. No heartbeat. No anything. I would have positively shit myself in fear, except I had no sense of losing sphincter control either. The only thing I could feel was pain, because my headache decided that this was a fantastic time to get a dozen times worse. And I focused on that headache like a starving dog focuses on a steak, because it was the only thing in the world I could feel. And then I passed out, because I think my brain decided I was feeling too much about not feeling anything. I can't say that I disagreed with it. When I came to again, I did not freak out, and I felt a little bit proud about that. Instead, I tried to calmly and rationally figure out what was going on. First hypothesis, I was dead. Discarded because that seemed kind of stupid. If I were dead, then yes, I wouldn't be feeling anything, but I also probably wouldn't be aware that I wasn't feeling anything. I just, wouldn't be. Unless this was the afterlife. But I doubted it was. I'm not much of a religious person, but most afterlives that I'd heard of were something more than a blank nothingness. If God or gods existed, and this was all they put together for eternal life, I wasn't very impressed with their user experience. So, probably alive, which was a start. Second hypothesis, was in some sort of coma. This seemed more reasonable, although I didn't really know anything about the medical facts of a coma. I didn't know if people in comas could actually think about things while they were in them. From the outside, they didn't seem like they were doing much. Tabled this idea for later thought. Third hypothesis? Not in a coma, but for some reason, trapped in my body without any sensation. This seemed like the most reasonable explanation on the surface, but two questions arose that I didn't have answers for. One, how I got into this predicament in the first place. I was conscious and knew who I was, but otherwise my memory of recent events was shaky. I remembered falling out of my bunk and then going to the bridge, but anything after that was a blur. This suggested to me that I had some sort of event. I knew people's memories of accidents or injury were sometimes wiped out by the trauma of the event itself. That seemed likely here. Whatever it was, I was in a bad way. Well, that wasn't news. I was a consciousness floating around in nothing. I'd gotten the "you're not doing so well" memo. But that was the second thing. Even if I were in terrible shape, which I assumed I was, I should be able to feel something or to sense something other than my own thoughts. I couldn't. Hell, I didn't even have a headache anymore. "You're awake." A voice, perfectly audible, indeterminate in terms of any identifying quality, coming from everywhere. I was shocked into immobility, or would have been if I had any way to be mobile. "Hello?" I said, or would have if I had been able to speak, which I wasn't, so nothing happened. I started to go into panic mode because I was reminded so clearly that there was something wrong with me, and because I was desperate that the voice, whoever it was, would not leave me alone again in the nothing. "You're trying to talk," the voice said, again from everywhere. "Your brain is trying to send signals to your mouth and tongue. It's not going to work. Think the words instead."
Like this? I thought.
Yes, the voice said.
And I would have cried with relief, if I could cry. A jumble of thoughts and emotions rose up in a panicky need to be expressed. I had to take a minute to calm down and focus on a single, coherent thought.
What happened to me? I asked. Why can't I speak?
You can't speak because you don't have a mouth or tongue, the voice said.
Why?
Because we took them from you.
I don't understand, I thought, after a long minute.
We took them from you, the voice repeated.
Did something happen to them? Was I in an accident?
No. They were perfectly fine, and no, you weren't.
I don't understand, I thought again.
We removed your brain from your body.
It's hard, looking back, to accurately convey the amount of utter incomprehension I was experiencing at this moment. I tried very hard to express my level of confusion and incredulity at the statement I just heard. What came out was,
What? We removed your brain from your body, the voice repeated.
Why would you do that?
You don't need them for what we need you to do. I was still not comprehending well, and absent anything else was numbly carrying on with the conversation, waiting for the whole thing to make the slightest bit of sense to me.
What do you need me to do? I thought.
Pilot your ship.
I need my mouth for that.
No, you don't.
How will I talk to the rest of the crew?
There is no other crew. At this, something surged in my brain. Something like a memory, but not an actual memory. A thought that I used to know what had happened to the crew of the Chandler, but now I didn't. And that whatever had happened wasn't good.
Where is the rest of the crew? I thought.
They are dead. All of them.
How?
We killed them.
My sense of panic was back. I knew this was right. That the voice was telling me the truth, but I couldn't picture how it had happened. I knew I used to know. I desperately wanted to know, but there was nothing in my mind that could tell me, nothing but an approaching wall of dread.
Why did you kill them? I thought.
Because they weren't needed. You need a crew to run a ship.
No, we don't.
Why not?
Because we have you.
I can't operate an entire ship by myself.
You will, or you'll die.
I can't even fucking move, I thought, exasperated.
This will not be a problem.
How do you expect me to pilot and operate an entire ship when I can't even move?
You are the ship now. And then, suddenly, the complete incomprehension was back.
Excuse me?
I finally thought.
You are the ship now, the voice repeated. I am the ship.
Yes.
I am the Chandler.
Yes.
What the fuck does that even mean?
We have removed your brain from your body, the voice said. We've integrated your brain with the Chandler. The ship is now your body. You will learn how to control your body.
I tried to process what I was being told and failed miserably. I could not imagine a single element of what I was being hit with. I could not imagine being a ship. I couldn't imagine trying to control such a complex machine all on my own. And if I don't, I thought, what happens if I can't learn how to control it?
Then you will die, the voice said.
I don't understand, I thought, again, and I imagined that the complete helplessness I felt was entirely obvious. Maybe that was the point.
It's not important for you to understand, the voice said.
To which some part of my brain immediately said, Fuck you, asshole.
But it didn't appear to have been sent, or at least the voice didn't respond to it. So I said something else to the voice instead.
Why would you do this to me?
This ship needs a pilot. You are a pilot. You know this ship.
That doesn't require taking my brain out of my goddamn skull, I thought.
It does.
Why?
It's not important for you to know.
I disagree,
It doesn't matter that you disagree.
It matters that I won't pilot the ship. I won't.
You will, or you will die.
I'm already a brain in a box, I thought. I don't care if I die.
I thought this was an excellent point, until a spasm of pain started. Remember that headache? That was a twinge compared to this. It felt like my entire body was turned in a seizing electrical cramp, and not even the wonder of feeling like I had a body again distracted me from just how much I hurt. Objectively, it can't have gone on for more than a few seconds. Subjectively, I think I aged a year through it. It stopped.
You do not have a body, but your brain does not know that, the voice said. All the pathways are still there. All the ways that your brain can still make you experience pain are ours to control. It's very simple to do. All the settings are already programmed. If we were so inclined, we could run them on a loop. Or we could simply leave you in the dark, deprived of every possible sensation, forever. So yes, if you will not pilot and operate this ship, then you will die. But before you die, you will learn just how far and how long your death can be delayed, and how much pain you can feel between now and then. And I assure you that you will care.
Who are you? I thought.
We are the only voice you will hear for the rest of your life, unless you do what we tell you.
Is that the royal we? I thought. Not to the voice, but to myself.
I don't know why the hell I thought that. I think being made to feel like I had a power station's worth of electricity run through my non-existent body might have made me a little loopy.
The voice didn't respond.
Which was the second time that happened, when I didn't think directly to the voice. Which was interesting.
What happens if I do what you tell me? I asked to the voice.
Then at the end of it, you will get your body back. It's a simple exchange. Do what you're told, and you will be you again. Refuse, and you will die in pain.
What is it you want me to do?
Pilot and operate this ship. We have already told you this.
Where and for what purpose?
That comes later, the voice said.
What do I do now? I asked.
Now you think, the voice said. You will think about what your choices are and what the consequences of those choices will be. I will give you a day to think about it here in the dark. It will be a long day.
Goodbye. Wait, I thought.
But the voice was already gone.
So, for the next day, I thought. First thought, definitely not dead. No need for a religious crisis. One small thing off the list of things to worry about. It was the only one, but anything would do at this point. Second thought, whoever it was who had me had captured my ship, killed my crew, taken my brain out of my body, and now expected me to run the ship entirely on my own for their own purposes, and would kill me if I didn't. Third thought, to hell with these people. There was no way I was going to do anything for them. In which case, they would be more than happy to torture me just for the fun of it. As I knew from experience, which was an actual consideration I had to take into account. Fourth thought, why me? As in, why did they take me and not someone else? I was third pilot of the Chandler. I was literally the newest crew member. They could have picked anyone else from that ship, and they would have made a better choice in terms of knowing the ship, how it works, and what its capabilities were. I was not the obvious choice.
Identify your pilots.
The sentence barreled out of my subconscious and stood in front of me, daring me to give it some sort of context. My memory was still spotty. I knew it had been spoken, but not by whom or when. I would need to rack my brain to figure it out. The thing was, I had time. And in time, an image popped into my head. A creature dressed in black, knees going the wrong way, giving the order to Captain Tao and shooting Li Han when she questioned the order.
an array. The array had taken me. That answered the question of who these people were, but it didn't answer the question of why me. The captain hadn't identified me as a pilot. She hadn't identified anyone as anything. Someone else did that. Secretary Ocampo.
Suddenly, the image of that bastard pointing me out blazed into my consciousness, clear as if I were reliving the moment. And then all the rest of it came back, too. Every blank spot in the memory suddenly filled with hard force, almost painfully jammed in. I had to stop. I had to stop to grieve for the crew of the Chandler. To grieve for the few friends I had made there, and for everyone else who I did not know but who did not deserve to die, just as I did not deserve to live instead of them. It took some time, but as I said before, I had the time. I took it. And then when I was done, I started fiddling with the problem again. Why was I taken? Because Secretary Ocampo knew me. He'd been introduced to me even before we'd gotten to the Chandler. We took the shuttle ride over, and I came to him when I had questions about our change of destination. He knew I was a pilot, but he also knew me as a person. Probably the only person he knew on the Chandler other than Captain Tao and Vera Briggs. It's possible he picked me simply because he knew I was a pilot. He knew there were other pilots on the ship. He'd probably seen Balduk on the bridge, but I was the first that came to mind because he'd met me. He knew me. Or thought he did. So maybe he didn't just pick me because I was a pilot. Maybe he picked me because he knew me as more than a random crew member. Maybe he saved me because there was a personal connection there. And wasn't there? Didn't I feel like I could go to his stateroom and ask him about the orders he had given the captain? Wasn't he at least a little impressed that I had figured it out? So yes, maybe he picked me because he knew me. Maybe because he liked me. Maybe he even thought he was saving me. Maybe he thought he was doing me a favor. Picking you to have your brain plucked out of your body is not my idea of a favor, some part of my brain said. Good point, brain, I thought, ignoring that I was now speaking to myself. But the point is, not what I thought of it. It was what Ocampo thought of it, and me. I wasn't flattering myself that I was important to Ocampo. I thought back to him telling Commander Tavan it was up to him whether or not to tell Vera Briggs to stay out of the life pods. If Ocampo was like that with his own assistant, who he'd worked with for years, he wasn't going to care much if I got uppity and troublesome. But until then, there might be something there to work with. What? And for what purpose? I didn't know yet. Well, that wasn't the point. The point was that I was now listing my potential assets, and one of those assets was that Ocampo, for whatever reason, picked me to pilot the Chandler, to become the Chandler. So, that was one thing. Another possible asset, what Ocampo didn't know about me. He knew my name, he knew my face, he knew I was a pilot, and that was it. Which meant what? It could mean nothing. Or it could mean that when they hooked me up to the Chandler's systems, they wouldn't know how much I already knew about the systems, or how to use them. Don't get too excited, that other part of my brain said. You're a brain in a box now, and they can see everything you do. They're probably looking at you thinking all this right now. Oh, you're depressing, I said to that other part of my brain. At least I'm not talking to myself. It said back. And anyway, you know I'm right. It was a fair point. I had to accept that leaving me alone with my thoughts could be part of a test that I was being given to see how I would respond. If they were able to follow my thoughts right now, I had to accept that they would use that information to decide what to do with me. Kill me or torture me or whatever. But I had a feeling they weren't. I had a feeling that the day alone with my thoughts was for another purpose entirely. It was to dominate me, to terrify me, to remind me how alone I was and how helpless I was, how utterly dependent I was on them now for my survival. And you know what? They would be right about that.
I was alone. I was dependent on them for survival. I was terrified. But I wasn't going to be dominated. Yes, I was isolated. Yes, I was scared. But I was also really, really pissed off. And that was the thing I decided I was going to work with. If they were listening to me when I was thinking this, they could kill me at any time, in which case they could get on with it, because otherwise they were just wasting my time and theirs. But I didn't think they were. I don't think they thought they had to, which was another possible asset. They assumed they had the upper hand in dealing with me. Again, fair enough. I was a brain in a box, and they could kill me or torture me any time they wanted. That's a pretty good definition of having the upper hand. But the fact was, they needed me. They needed a pilot for the Chandler. They had me. And they had only me. Everyone else in the crew they had killed off, suffocating them in those life pods. They were so sure they had the upper hand with me that they didn't bother with a spare. Which said to me, either they had never done this before and had no idea what they were doing, or they had done this a lot and the response by their pilot victims was always the same. I thought about the RA saying that their engineers could repair the ship and get it going again because this was something they were used to. I thought of their efficient way of dealing with the crew to cow them and get what they wanted. It was clear this wasn't something they were new to. They had done this before, and maybe were right now doing it with pilots other than me. They expected the pilots to be desperate and to be willing to do anything to get their bodies back. They were so used to the response, they didn't really think any other response was possible. So no, I didn't think they were listening in on me right then. I didn't think they thought they had to. I could be wrong, but it was an assumption I was willing to go on. That gave me free time to think and plan. Another asset that I had, for now anyway. Then there was the final asset I had. I knew I was already dead. By which I mean I knew that their promise to return me to my body was almost 100% certain to be complete bullshit. There was no way that was going to happen. I knew that because they killed the crew of the Chandler. I knew it because of what Ocampo said when I pleaded with him to send the skip drone back to Phoenix Station to save the crew. I knew it because of how they lied to the crew to lead them willingly to their deaths. They had no intention of putting me back into my body. I was as close to certain as I could be that my body was already gone, incinerated or tossed into space or put into a stew because the RA had a reputation for eating humans when they had the chance. I thought about my body in a very large pot, simmering. I actually found it blackly amusing. Whatever was done with it, my body was history. I was sure of it. I was also sure that whatever it was that Ocampo and the RA, or whatever it was they were working for, wanted me to do when I was done with it, they would flip whatever switch they had and simply murder me then. That is, if whatever mission they were going to have me do wasn't already a suicide mission, which I suspected it probably would be. Or at least they wouldn't lose a lot of sleep if I didn't come back. I was under no illusion that my fate wasn't the same as that of the rest of the Chandler's crew. It was just a question of when. And the answer of when was when they were done using me for whatever it was they had planned. Which meant that I had whatever time existed between now and then to, in no particular order, find out who they were, besides Ocampo and a bunch of RA soldiers, discover what they had planned, learn how to stop them, and kill the hell out of all of them. All of them, that is, except Ocampo. If there was some way to bring him back to Colonial Union space, I was going to do it. Because no matter what else, I think they were going to be very interested in whatever it was he was wrapped up in. And because he didn't deserve to get off as easy as him dying would let him. You're pretty ambitious for a disembodied brain, that other part of my brain said again. Huh? I've got nothing else to do, I replied. Because it was true. All I had right now were my thoughts and time. Lots of time.
So, I took it. At some point, I think I slept. It's hard to tell when you have no outside frame or reference to let you know if you're actually asleep. I do know I didn't dream. I was okay with that. And at some point, the voice came back.
"You have had time to think on your situation," the voice said. "Now it is time to make your decision."
The voice was right. It was time to make my decision. Not whether or not I would decide to stay alive. I'd already decided that one early on. What I was deciding now was how to act in front of the voice. Should I be cowed and afraid? Should I be defiant and rebellious, but still willing to do what they wanted? Should I just remain silent and do only what the voice told me to? This was an important decision because how I responded to the voice now would establish what our relationship was and possibly what would be allowed me in the future and what I might be able to get away with. If I picked the wrong attitude, that would have negative consequences. If I was too complacent, maybe they would simply treat me as the machine they made me into. Too rebellious, and I'd spend all my spare time getting zapped. Neither was what I wanted, especially getting zapped. Once was enough.
"What is your decision?" the voice asked.
"I have questions," I thought suddenly, which wasn't how I was expecting to go, but okay, let's see what happens next.
"Your questions are not relevant," the voice said.
"Well, let me rephrase that," I said. "I'm going to do what you want. I've decided that. But it would help me if I knew a few things as well. I understand I can't force you to answer any questions, but it would help me be helpful to you if you would consider answering them." There was an actual pause here.
"What are your questions?"
"I have three," I said. Which, again, was news to me, but I could come up with three questions, right? And, in fact, one popped up in my head. "First, do you have a name?"
"Why would that matter?"
"Because I feel awkward just thinking of you as that voice in my head," I thought. "If we are going to be working together, it would be nice to have a name for you."
"You may call me Control," the voice said.
"Okay, good," I thought. "Hello, Control." Control waited, silent. Well, fine. "Second, would it be possible for me to speak to Secretary Ocampo at some point?"
"Why would you need to speak to him?"
"I don't need to speak to him," I thought. "I have already agreed to help you, but when I was taken off the Chandler, he told me that he was doing this, whatever this is, to help humanity. I want to talk to him more about that, to understand what he meant."
"It doesn't matter if you understand," Control said.
"I know this," I thought. "And though I know you're under no obligation to care, I disagree. You have my help. But if you had my understanding, I might be even more useful. Secretary Ocampo is an admirable man. I respect him. If he's doing this, he must have a reason. I think that reason could make sense to me. I would like to know more about it."
"We will not let you speak to Secretary Ocampo now," Control said. "But if in your work you do well, we may consider it for the future."
Fair enough, I thought.
"Do not ask us about it again."
"Of course not. You've already said you'd think about it. That's enough."
"Your final question. Will you give me your word that I will get my body back?"
"My word," Control said. "Yes, your word," I thought. "Your promise. I already said I would help you. I will. I will do everything you ask me to. You said that if I did, I would get my body back. That was the deal. But there are deals and there are promises. A deal you can make with anyone. A promise is something you make with someone you trust. If you make a promise with me, that means I can trust you. And that means I can stop worrying about whether I can believe you or not. And that means I can do what you ask me to better." And once more, there was a pause. I had a point in asking these questions, even if I didn't know I was doing it when I started. Information, trust, creating intimacy and a relationship. I'd asked for a name, and while Control wasn't much of a name, it was something. A personalization.
something that made that royal we into an I. Asking to speak to a capo further extended our deal and turned it from something general, something they probably forced on every pilot whose brain they put into a box, into something specific to me. And asking for control's word? More intimacy. Making the deal between me and it. Something with reciprocity. Something with trust. It was also a test.
"You have my word," Control said. Now I knew everything I needed to know about Control. And Control had no idea that I knew. "That's all I need," I said. "I'm ready to get started when you are."
"Then let's begin," Control said. The Chandler's Bridge appeared all around me. Or, more accurately, a computerized visual representation of the Chandler's Bridge, cleaner, plainer, and with all extraneous details stripped from view.
"You recognize this," Control prompted.
"Of course," I thought. It was the standard bridge simulation program used for training purposes, configured for the Chandler's Bridge setup, which in itself was pretty standard. I recognized it because, like anyone else who ever did time on a bridge, I'd spent a couple of hundred hours using it in addition to actual physical training at the specific bridge station. I also recognized it because I helped to program it. Or a slightly earlier version of it, anyway. It had been a few years. This was probably an updated release of it. That said, a quick glance suggested that not much had changed in the software since I had worked on it. It didn't even look like it was a new major release from what I had worked on. A point release, maybe? With some minor fixes? How does an organization clearly not hooked into the mainstream of Colonial Union commerce even get these programs? I felt vaguely annoyed on behalf of my former employer that this program had clearly been pirated. Not that I was about to mention to Control that I had worked on the program. Control didn't know because Ocampo didn't know, and I saw no reason to let either know. Control already thought I was stupid enough to believe its word on things. I wasn't going to do anything to dissuade it of that notion. "It's the bridge simulator program," I thought to Control.
"It used to be a bridge simulator program," Control said. "And for now, it will continue to be so. But we've adapted it to control the Chandler. Ultimately, you will be able to control all the ship systems from inside of it."
"How will I do that?" I asked. "The simulator program is designed as a virtual space, but tracks actual hand and body movements. I'm missing both."
"Here," Control said, and I was in a virtual body. My view was clearly meant to be from head height. By thinking about it, I could move it on a swivel, like I had an actual neck. I looked down and a stripped-down visual representation of a human body was there. I imagined moving my hands, and my hands came up from my sides, palms toward me, featureless where there should have been palm lines and fingerprints. I nearly had a breakdown right then. I was so grateful. Even a fake body like this was better than no body at all. Even so, some part of my brain, I think maybe the same part that argued with me earlier, was going, "Really? That's it?" I knew what it meant. It meant that these assholes had taken my brain out of my body to run the Chandler, and I had to run the Chandler all on my own, and the way they intended me to run the Chandler was with a simulation of a human body I no longer had. Which seemed, I don't know, inefficient. If you're going to take the time to get rid of my body, then maybe take the time to create a control metaphor that takes advantage of not being limited to a human body anymore. "They didn't take you out of your body for efficiency's sake," said that part of my brain. Well, yeah, I figured that out a while back. It was about fear and control. But still, kind of a waste of effort. I pulled myself back together, metaphorically, and looked around the simulated bridge. "Are you coming onto the bridge with me?" I asked Control. "No," it said. "Please go to the captain's chair."
I nodded. The captain's chair had a screen where she could look at the information from all the stations, either at once or one at a time. Captain Tao, like most captains, tended to take reports from her bridge crew,
who were better at boiling down the information into what she needed to know immediately. But she could get all the information from the screen if she wanted to boil it down herself, which meant that I could too. Likewise, the captain could control the ship from the screen if she wanted, rather than giving orders. Very few captains did, because things get complicated fast, and besides, if you want to make your bridge crew unhappy, the best way to do it was to try to do their job for them. The fact is that no captain was competent at every bridge station. Most didn't try to be. Except now I would have to be. I sat in the virtual captain's chair and pulled up the captain's screen. "I'm ready," I thought to control. The virtual captain's screen lit up and all the department windows opened in a grid. Tapping twice on one of the windows would cause it to expand to full screen and become fully interactive. Only one department screen could be full screen at one time, but you could also chain full-size department screens together and swipe through them to access them quickly. It was all pretty basic, except for the fact that I would be responsible for monitoring and dealing with all of them. I looked further at the captain's start grid. "Some of these are blank," I said. "Some of the ship functions you no longer need to control," Control said. "You will be the only living thing on the ship, and your living area is tightly sealed and controlled by us, so you will not need life support controls. Likewise, communications. We control those and several other ship-related functions. Others, such as engineering, you need to control only on a limited basis, and the maintenance of those functions will now be handled by us. The only ship's functions you need to concern yourself with are navigation, weapons, and propulsion, including skipping." "Well, that makes things simple, at least," I thought to Control. I made the windows for navigation, propulsion, and weapons full-sized and chained them together. "I'm ready," I sent. "We're sending you a simulated mission now," Control said. "It is a simple one, focused primarily on navigation. Let's begin." 10 hours of simulation that first day, at least by the simulation clock, almost all of it dead simple navigation that as a pilot I could do in my sleep. I had a suspicion that the simulations were not specifically chosen for me by Control, but might have been simply on a list of simulations to run that it was running through. It was boring. But it was also manageable. There was nothing that first day that I wasn't able to do. The piloting, like most piloting, was about feeding information into the computer and then dealing with anything unusual that might go wrong. Nothing went wrong with any of these initial simulations. The most difficult thing I had to do was slide the simulated Chandler out of the way of a chunk of rock floating out in space. I considered using the simulated Chandler's lasers to vaporize it. It was small enough, but I figured that wasn't what the simulation was about yet. And anyway, vaporizing it ran the risk of creating a bunch of even tinier bits of rock, harder to track, that some other ship would then ram into. Most ships could handle a micrometeor impact, but why create a problem for someone else when you didn't have to? So I moved the Chandler out of the way, logged the rock's present location and direction, and then would have simulated sending a data packet to nearby ships, except that I was not in charge of ships' communications. So instead I made a notation to have the data sent to other ships at the earliest opportunity. If Control were noting any of this, I didn't know about it. Control was entirely silent for that entire simulation, and the other runs we ran that day. "You will be controlling the ship alone," Control said when I asked it about the silence between runs. "You will not have us nor any other person to communicate with once you begin your missions. You need to get used to the silence." "You're not worried about boredom?" I asked. "Human minds need a little stimulation outside of monitoring navigation systems." "This has not been a problem before," Control said. Which is how I learned for sure that I was not the first person they had done this to. I thought about other people in the same predicament and would have shuddered if I could. It also suggested to me that I might not even be the only person currently in my situation, that Control, whoever it was, might also be running simulations with other people and ships, even as it was working with me. It would be something I would need to find out, eventually. "We're done for the day," Control eventually said. "We will continue again tomorrow." "How many hours will that be?" I asked. I didn't know if Control was human, and wherever we were was almost certainly not a human outpost, so I had no idea of how long a day would be. "About 12 hours from now," Control said after a minute. I think I may have had to look up what hours were to make the conversion. "What do I do now?" I asked. "Whatever you like," Control said. "I'd like to go jogging," I thought. Control didn't say anything to that. I was getting the idea that Control, whoever it was, did not have a particularly good sense of humor. "What is there for me to do?" I asked. "If you like, you may reload today's simulations and run them again," Control said. "In fact, I suggest it." "Is there anything else?" I asked. "Anything to read? Anything to watch? Anything to listen to?" "No," Control said. "May I request some form of entertainment?" I asked. "Anything would be good. If I only have navigation simulations, I think my effectiveness will eventually decrease." "If it decreases too far, then you'll be punished," Control said. "If it decreases after that, you will be killed." Well, that's motivation of a sort, I thought to Control. Control didn't respond. I suspected Control had left the simulation. "You need to get used to the silence," I thought to myself, repeating Control's words from earlier in the day. Well, I was getting used to it whether I liked it or not. I looked down at the simulated captain's chair and at the captain's screen on which a small menu tab appeared with the day's missions. I could reload them if I liked. Instead, I got up and ran around the simulated bridge, doing laps. Then I did some push-ups and lunges and sit-ups. I want to be clear, I was under no impression that what I was doing constituted actual exercise. I couldn't feel my simulated body. Even the double taps and swipes I made during the day were numbly done. I wasn't doing it to keep my body in shape. I didn't have a body to have a shape. I did it because it was something else to do besides what Control wanted me to do. Something I wanted to do on my own time. My way of exercising my own control. If you want to put it that way. It even kind of worked. Eventually, I got tired. I lay down on the simulated floor to go to sleep and discovered I didn't have simulated eyelids. It didn't matter. I was asleep fast enough anyway. This time, I knew I had slept. 2 days later, I broke the bridge simulation and escaped. Sort of. It happened after hours, once Control had gone off for the night, or what I assumed was night anyway. I was running one of the day's previous simulations, this one requiring me to navigate the Chandler into a docking position at a space station. It's the sort of maneuver that I'd done dozens, if not hundreds of times, both simulated and real. There was no challenge to it whatsoever. So I did what anyone doing a simulated run does when they're bored and there's no penalty for misbehavior. I started wrecking things. First, I rammed the space station with the Chandler because I was interested, purely for the science, how realistic the impact would be in terms of the simulation's rendering of classical physics. Answer? Not bad. I had limited control of outside sensors, so I saw both the Chandler and the space station crumple nicely, with appropriate bursts of metal and glass due to explosive decompression as the Chandler plowed through the station. My sensors did not indicate the Chandler's engines overloading, however, which would have created a nice bit of mayhem. So I ran the simulation again, this time giving the Chandler enough distance to make for some impressive acceleration before I hit the space station. This time, the Chandler exploded. All my control windows flashed red before blanking out. Never a positive sign for the structural integrity of the ship. The simulation did not detail either economic or human losses, but I doubt anyone in the station sections I hit or the Chandler crew would have survived. The Chandler crew didn't survive already, that other part of my brain said. I ignored it. The next run-through, I was curious what would happen if I attacked the station. The simulations I had run didn't require me to operate any of the weaponry systems, so while Control was around, I hadn't bothered with them. But I had control of them anyway, and they were fully operational, so... In the next simulation, I launched 3 missiles at the station, just to see what would happen. A minute later, my damage sensors went bright red as 10 missiles from the station struck the Chandler at various critical spots, taking out weapons, engines, crew compartments, and outside sensors. About a second after that, my screens went blank, because in this simulation, the Chandler had just been turned into an expanding cloud of debris.
Well, that was rude, I thought,
and would have smiled if I could. Several more simulations after that, attacking the space station, then attacking other ships at the station, firing at shuttles, basically any combination of tactics that involved surprising someone with a missile. All the simulations ended pretty much the same way, the Chandler being turned into a missile pincushion. All right, fine. Let's try this, I thought, and ran the simulation again. This time I didn't ram the station or fire on it. I just slid the Chandler into docking position and waited until the simulation gave me the victory condition signal, the signal that I had done what the simulation required of me. Then I launched a barrage of missiles at the space station, aiming specifically for its weapon systems, the ones I could see visually, but also the ones I couldn't, going off the data I had of the space station. I timed the missiles so they would impact all the weapon systems at the same time, which they did. And then, while everything was blowing up nicely, I opened up the throttles on the engines and headed straight into the mess. And as the Chandler made first contact with the skin of the space station, something happened. Everything went black. Not just the captain's screens, which would have indicated that the Chandler had been destroyed. No. Everything went black. There was the simulation, and then, for several full seconds, there it wasn't. I spent those several seconds in the complete blackness, wondering what the hell had just happened. Then the bridge simulation popped up again around me. I knew what had just happened. I'd crashed the simulator. And then, I'm not going to lie to you, my brain just went off. Here is the thing about that bridge simulator. The bridge simulator was now my whole world. I lived in it, running simulations and nothing else. I couldn't leave it. I was in it. But I didn't have any control over it other than being able to run the simulations control gave me to run. I couldn't step outside of the simulation or close it out or mess with the code in any way. I was trapped in it. It was my prison. But when I crashed the simulator, it booted me out. For a few seconds there, I was somewhere else.
Where else?
Well, what happens when a program crashes? You get booted back into the system the program runs on. Not literally in the system. My consciousness hadn't been sucked into a computer or anything. That's stupid. My consciousness was in my brain, like it always was. But before, my senses had been dropped into the bridge simulation. Everything I could see or sense was inside of it. For those few seconds when the simulator crashed, I was somewhere else. The system the simulator ran on. I wasn't seeing anything, and then the bridge simulation popped up again, which said to me that the bridge simulator crashing wasn't entirely unheard of. Control, or whomever, had to set up a restart routine to go directly back into the bridge simulator without giving the pilot any time to figure out what was going on or to see the computer interface he or she was working within. But that didn't necessarily mean the pilot was completely locked out of the system. I launched the docking simulation again. If control knew the program crashed, then that meant it knew where the bugs were, or knew where some of them were. So either it knew where they were and did nothing about them other than relaunching the system directly back into the simulator, or it did something about it and tried to patch the code, and in the process possibly created new bugs when the new code interacted poorly with the old code. Control wouldn't know anything about the new bugs unless they glitched during a run it was watching. And no one would do what I just did while Control was watching because Control would probably electrocute them for farting around. So, Control didn't know that this glitch was there. But some glitches are transient and not reproducible. Those are the hardest as a programmer to fix.
I ran the simulation exactly as I had before to see if the glitch would replicate in the same way. It did. So I ran it a third time. And this time, when the program crashed, I thought about the commands that, when the system we programmed the bridge simulator on was booted up, would open the diagnostics and modification screens for the system. I thought about them really hard. And 2 seconds later, there they were. The diagnostics and modifications screens. Ugly and utilitarian, just like they have been since the very beginnings of visual user interface. Ooh, they were beautiful. They meant that I was into the system. More specifically, I was into the Chandler's system. Well, a little, anyway. This would be the part of the story where, if this were a video piece, the heroic hacker would spew a couple of lines of magical code and everything would open up to him. The bad news for me was that this was very much not my personal situation. I'm not a heroic hacker with magic code. I was a brain in a box. But I am a programmer. Or was. And I knew the system. I knew the software. And I had a plan. And a little bit of time before anyone was going to bother me again. So, I got to work. I'm not going to bore you with the details of what I did. If you're a programmer and you know the system and the hardware and the code, then what I did would be really cool and endlessly fascinating, and we could have a seminar about it, and about system security and how any system fundamentally falls prey to the belief that all variables are accounted for, when in fact the only variables accounted for are the ones you know about, or more accurately, that you think you know about. The rest of you would have your eyes glaze over and pray for death. I assume that's most of you. So, for the rest of you, what you need to know, first, the work, the first part of it anyway, took more than a single night. It actually took a couple of weeks, and during all that time, I waited for the moment where Control, or whoever, looked at the Chandler system and found evidence of me wandering around in it, making changes and trying to get into places where I shouldn't. I waited for the moment they found out and the moment they decided to punish me for it. But they didn't. I'm not going to lie. Part of me was annoyed that they didn't. Because that's some lax security. All of it was lax. When whoever it is took over the Chandler, they left the system wide open, with only the basic level of security that would have been outmoded right at the beginning of the computer era. Either they were so sure that they didn't need to worry about security where they were, everyone could be trusted and no one would try to screw with things, or they were just idiots. Maybe both. The level of insecurity was actually offensive. But it worked to my advantage, and without it, I would probably be dead, so I shouldn't really complain. Those first 2 weeks were the scariest for me because what I was doing was pretty much out in the open. I tried to hide what I was doing as well as I could, but someone who was looking could have found it. If Control or anyone else looked into my extracurricular sessions, they would have seen me running one particular simulation the same way over and over and could have seen what I was doing. It meant that if during the simulations where Control was watching, if the program crashed, it might code a patch, and that patch could affect the bug I was using to exit the program, which meant I would be trapped again. I was very, very, very careful in the simulations Control watched. Never did anything rash, never did anything not by the book. The irony of doing things exactly as they wanted me to, so they wouldn't find out the things they might torture or kill me for, was not lost on me. Those 2 weeks were literally the worst 2 weeks of my life. I already knew that whoever it was that had me was planning to kill me after I did what they wanted of me, but even knowing that didn't ease any of the stress of messing with the code. Of knowing I was exposed if anyone decided to look and yet doing it anyway. It's one thing to know you're already dead. It's another to work on something that might give you a chance to stay alive as long as no one decides to look. They never looked. Never. Because they didn't think they had to. I was so grateful for it. And at the same time, so contemptuous of it. They deserved what I was going to do to them, whatever it was.
I hadn't figured it out yet. But when I did, no sympathy. What I did with those 2 weeks, blue pill. Now, I don't know where the phrase comes from. It's been used for a long time. Look it up. But what it means is that I created an overlay for the Chandler's computer system, a just about exact replica. I copied it, tweaked it, attached everything coming in from the outside to it, as well as the bridge simulator. It looked like, responded like, and would control things like the actual computer system for the Chandler, but it wasn't. That system, the one that actually ran the Chandler, was running underneath the copy. And that one, well, that one I was totally in control of. The reality underneath the simulation. The reality that no one but me knew existed below the simulation. The simulation that everyone thought reflected reality. That's the blue pill. For the next month, every day, all day, I ran more and more complex missions on the bridge simulator. More simulations where I had to juggle navigation with weapons. It was clear to me that whatever they were training me for, it had a significant military component. They were expecting me to go to battle for them. They may or may not have expected me to survive the battle. I think not survive was the more likely scenario. This was not a surprise. Through this all, I kept up the chatter with control, to engage it, to make it feel something for me, to make it see the person it had put into a box. I was not notably successful, but I wasn't expecting to be. What I had to be was the same person control thought I was, the one who had decided to help, the one who had decided to trust control. I didn't want to mess that up. I wanted control and anyone else listening to get exactly what they were expecting. I wanted them to be as smug about their small c control over me as they ever were. They did not disappoint. And while they were thinking that, when control left me alone after a day of simulations, I had free run of the Chandler, which, as it turned out, was undergoing some drastic renovations, notably having the actual weapons systems reinstalled. Before it had been the Chandler, the ship had been a Colonial Defense Forces frigate. When it was decommissioned, those weapons systems were removed and dismantled. Now, systems were being put back into place. The ship was crawling with workers inside and out. I hadn't been aware of them before because why would I be? I was a brain in a box, trapped in a simulation. But now I could see and hear everything that was going on with the ship. The workers were not mostly human. Most of them, as far as I could tell, were array, just like the soldiers who attacked the Chandler in the first place. Every now and then, however, a single human would show up on the ship and advise or direct the weapons installation. It was always the same human. She was not Ocampo, or Vera Briggs, his assistant. This was someone entirely new. Whatever was going on from the human side, there was more than Ocampo involved. Watching the workers installing the weapons systems, I realized I had gotten lucky. In a couple of more weeks, they'd be done with their installation, and then the weapons systems would be plugged into Chandler's computer system. If the work had been done earlier, or I had started my work later, I would have been found out. There was a small window, and I had plopped into it, which made me feel like the luckiest guy in the universe. Until I remembered I was still a brain in a box. Which brings me to the other thing I found on the Chandler. Me. I was on the bridge, in a large rectangular box that looked, for all the world, like a coffin. The top of the box was clear. From my vantage point of the bridge cameras, I could look straight down into it and see my brain, and the electronic elements that were attached to it, to the surface of the gray matter, and, I assumed, inside of it as well. I could see the hard wires snaking out of it toward a juncture on the side of the box. I saw the liquid in which my brain was suspended, discolored, slightly pink. I saw tubes connected to my brain, I assume taking in and bringing out blood or something substituting for it. Something that brought in nutrients and oxygen and took out waste. The tubes also snaked out to a juncture in the box's interior wall.
A change in camera and in perspective, and I saw another box into which the wires and tubes went. It's this box I saw two Array, who I assume were doctors, come to and open daily, doing diagnostic work. Inside were filtering systems, intake and sampling valves, hardwired computers to monitor my brain's well-being, and something else that I couldn't identify at first, until one of the Array accidentally jostled it, and the other yelled at it for doing so. The Chandler's system has within it a translation library for several hundred known species. It, like most such libraries on trade ships, almost never gets used because we're mostly dealing with humans. Nevertheless, it's there and on hand for when or if you need to translate anything. It translated what the second Array said to the first. "Keep that up," it said. "You'll blow up all three of us." "Then at least our remains would get to go back home," the first Array said. "I would prefer to go back home in a form that would allow me to enjoy it," the second Array said, and then inserted a dongle into one of the hardwired monitors. I assumed to check on how my brain was doing and make adjustments. I imagine the information showed that at that very moment, I had a spike of anxious brain activity. Because of the bomb. On top of everything else, they had a bomb attached to me. In case I was at all concerned that they ever had any intention of letting me get out of this alive. In case I was thinking I was really going to escape this hell.